What happens inside prisons is often out of sight and out of mind to the public, and yet violence of all sorts is an everyday reality in prisons all across the country. 5 years ago, a group of academics invited the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections to participate in a multi-state consortium to study prison violence. As this project now comes to a close, the findings are more timely than ever as the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections has experienced a recent uptick in prison violence. Today, we'll talk with Dr. Nancy Rodriguez, the lead investigator on the Prison Violence Project. She'll explain what the team has learned about prison violence through this project and how it can help improve the safety of both staff and incarcerated people in prisons across the country. Hello, I'm Ryan Tarkowski, and this is Pracademically Speaking, a conversation where ideas and numbers get real. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Nancy Rodriguez, professor at the University of California, Irvine. Dr. Rodriguez, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Glad to have you. To begin with, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a bit about your background and your research interests?
Sure. I'm a professor in the Department of Criminology, Law, and Society here at UCI. And before that, I worked in the federal government as the director of the National Institute of Justice, which is a science agency within the Department of Justice. I'm a political scientist who studies crime and the justice system. And my research interests fall in two areas. The first is on the racial and ethnic disparities that exist in the system. And the second is on corrections. In that area, I study the impact of correctional programming and policies designed to improve the outcomes of persons during their incarceration period and then post-release.
Seems like we're always trying new programs and policies, so I can understand where your research is centered on. Now, I understand that you have been working with the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections and several other states for a few years now to study prison violence. Can you tell us about that project?
Sure. This project is really an attempt to fill gaps both in research and in policy. Now, given the limited research on violence, I really wanted to create foundational research on the drivers and the consequences of violence, which is certainly necessary to inform the policies and the data-driven strategies to prevent and reduce violence. So I assembled a team of researchers and solicited the interest of 7 state correctional systems from really geographically diverse parts of the country and also diverse in the population they manage and the mission of the agencies. So the states include Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Ohio, Texas, Arizona, Colorado, and Oregon. Ultimately, we created a learning community comprised of correctional leaders and administrators and research, which we call the Prison Violence Consortium. Now, in terms of our approach, we really set out to do something unprecedented, and that is to examine multiple sources of data, including administrative disciplinary records. So our work provided us access to over 1 million records across systems, across multiple years. We reviewed thousands of incident reports involving violence and also interviewed incarcerated men and correctional staff who were engaged in violence, as well as reviewed training material that specifically directs the responses to violence. As researchers, we're often really limited to data from one state or facility, and studies overwhelmingly on violence draw on disciplinary infraction data. Because we know violence are so varied, having data from different prison systems was a real advancement, and coupled with, of course, the different sources of data. So a real puzzle of a project, I like to say.
Why do you think the research has been lacking for so long? It seems to me like prison violence would be something that's as old as prisons themselves.
Yeah, great question, Ryan. I think in many ways we have had research focus in two different areas. You either have had very in-depth studies conducted by ethnographic methods where people become embedded in prisons and study those systems as extensively as they're allowed, which is important because it does give you a perspective about that particular system over a period of time. The other strand of research often is, and this is far more common, the use of administrative data, which are more easily accessible. They're automated data that researchers can access, and they certainly provide us a window into particular forms of violence, right? Those that are disciplinary acts that lead to some kind of ticket or misconduct. Beyond that, surveys and interviews are difficult given the access and the time that researchers must dedicate, and as well as systems themselves being able to dedicate time to providing that access to researchers. All of that makes it a really time-consuming endeavor, which can be challenging. So we rely on what we have, and unfortunately, that is fairly limited.
Can you share with us some of the themes, some of the findings of your project so far?
Absolutely. So let me begin maybe with a few patterns from the administrative data that we reviewed. And here, I'll be speaking to the guilty disciplinary infraction data that we received and were able to analyze. We found that violence was really concentrated among a small subset of persons. Approximately 10% of the incarcerated population in these states accounted for more than 50% of the guilty violent infractions. In fact, in Pennsylvania, we found that the majority of individuals, 93% of the incarcerated population, have fairly low risk for violence. That means that 7% actually have your higher risk for violence. Now, in terms of timing, in all of our states, we found that these infractions of violence happen early in someone's incarcerated term. Specifically, about two-thirds of these violent infractions happen during the first 6 to 12 months of someone's admission. Now, when we look at other sources of data that we reviewed, and here, let me turn to the incident reports. We analyzed and coded over 500 incident reports in Pennsylvania, from Pennsylvania. And we learned that approximately 30% of these incident reports involved assaults among incarcerated persons, and an additional 30% involve fights. 20% involve assaults towards staff, and an additional 16% involve biohazard incidences. So that gives us another insight into violence, which is different, of course, from the disciplinary guilty infraction data. Now, the incident reports were also useful because they provided information that is often not readily available in administrative data. So for example, we found that most of the violence as documented in incident reports, and here I'm speaking to Pennsylvania, happened in cells or in housing areas. So about 51% of these incident reports documented violence happening in housing or in cells. An additional 38% happened in common areas. Now, one of the insights that we were really interested in tapping into is the degree of physical injuries that result from violence. And what we learned from our incident reports is that most incidents resulted in no reported physical injury, both for incarcerated persons and staff. That is to say that serious physical injuries do happen, but they are less common maybe than we often think. Among incident reports, 23% of those reports indicated injuries, serious injuries for incarcerated persons. And among those incident reports involving staff assaults, 13% of those incident reports had some noted serious physical injury. Now, the reports themselves also glean into the administrative responses of violence. In other words, how does staff intervene in light of these incidents? And we found that 72% of these incident reports actually do have some noted staff intervention. In particular, whether it's this physical intervention to stop the violence in about 66% of these incidents, or physical restraints, the use of physical restraints, which was documented in about 61% of these cases. Chemical agents are also a means to obviously intervene. And we found that, again, in Pennsylvania, in the incident reports themselves, chemical agents were noted in about 36% of these reports. Now,
Did these numbers hold steady across the other states that you looked at as well? I know some states have maybe different chemical agents or policies and procedures, so it might not line up exactly, but was that the general trend?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, great question. I mean, we found, some clear similarities in these responses. But I would like to note that with incident report data, we also did find across the states lack of details and information that we thought would be available. So, for example, we found that only in 35% of incident reports actually mentioned the precipitating events, what led to the violence itself, and that held across all of our states. That was fairly similar. Of course, we don't know whether the lack of information is really due to what is known at the time that the report is being documented. Maybe not everyone has been interviewed about the incident, or it's actually an omission of how the reports themselves are written, or a combination of both. But to answer your question, yes, I mean, these are patterns that we found across our states. Now, Ryan, I also noted that we were able to interview individuals directly impacted by violence, and this included, of course, specifically incarcerated men and staff. And what we found is that these interviews indicated that violence is highly prevalent, and that most of the violence remains unknown to staff or is actually not written up. And again, this across our states. In Pennsylvania in particular, 82% of the incarcerated men who we interviewed about a focal incident indicated that at least one incident was unknown or reported to staff. And more than a third of those men that we interviewed indicated that at least one incident was known or reported to staff, but not written up. So we asked, of course, why violence unfolds, which we feel is central to violence prevention efforts. I think there are many attempts currently throughout the country trying to implement programs and policies to reduce violence. And I think myself and my team would argue you have to target the reason violence unfolds. And in Pennsylvania, we found that there are two primary reasons, at least according to the men that we interviewed, around why violence unfolds. And the first one is disrespect, individuals feeling that they were disrespected, and I could talk a little bit more about that. And the second reason is cellmate incompatibility. Overwhelmingly, these were the two reasons that individuals said was a reason that violence unfolded. In terms of our interviews with staff, let me just add that, and we did get an opportunity to interview staff who themselves were involved in a staff assault. And what we heard from the incarcerated population also mirrors what we heard from staff, the reason that they said, or the situations that led to the violence towards staff, were these primary reasons for violence among incarcerated men. Cellmate conflicts happen and then staff have to intervene, or mental health episodes, which then require staff intervention. But I should note that we did hear from staff also being directly targeted for violence, most often given food tray slot incidences. Those were reported to us by staff as well.
That's the voice of Dr. Nancy Rodriguez from the University of California, Irvine. She and her team are studying prison violence. I'll have a few more questions after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
This is Ryan Tarkowski with Dr. Nancy Rodriguez from the University of California, Irvine. We've been discussing her prison violence project. Dr. Rodriguez, the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections has had a surge in prison violence incidents this year. What advice from your research do you have for us about what we can do to address this?
Yeah, no, we would certainly as a team encourage the implementation of detailed and dynamic risk assessment tools to identify individuals prone to becoming repeat rule violators. We feel this information could really help the department and staff be more proactive rather than reactive in identifying and hopefully utilizing de-escalating techniques before violence begins to elevate. We would also encourage targeted strategies for violence prevention and management. So, for example, the department could enhance individuals' transition into prison environments, after admission. And also,
because that goes back to the two things that you brought up earlier, right? The fact that the small number of inmates cause an outsized amount of violence, and earlier it is in their incarceration, more propensity for violence.
Exactly, Ryan. So I think anything that we can do to target that population and really help with this transition for individuals could help certainly reduce incidences of violence. Now we know violence is going to happen. And what do we do with that population? So here again, the implementation of tailored strategies for this high risk population, like closer monitoring of the population and the incorporation of behavioral health treatment modalities with trauma-informed components could really be effective. And for staff, certainly significantly enhancing the mental health support that they receive, which we also heard from staff would certainly improve the work environment for them. A third policy lever that we feel is certainly worth considering and exploring centers on housing. You heard me convey the cell incompatibility issues that come about. So I think finding ways to maximize that compatibility, but also identifying ways to ensure that violence is not a vehicle for individuals looking for single cell housing becomes important here. And ultimately, I think identifying how housing policy is being implemented in practice and that fidelity, I think could certainly provide windows of strategies to enhance who you live with and ensuring that things run smoothly. And I think, the final thing that I'll say is that The pandemic really changed how prison functions, and especially the supervision of people, given access to people. So we learned that this transition from a highly restricted environment during the pandemic to a less constrained environment in recent years has been challenging, not only for the incarcerated population, but for staff, especially new recruits brought in during the pandemic and post-pandemic. So, having staffing training for really this multi-generational workforce, which we heard about a lot, this multi-generational workforce could really help close the generational differences in staff's demeanor, in their expectations, in their communication styles, and really ensure uniformity in the implementation of policies, especially around de-escalation training, which we heard from staff was really useful, but they were hoping could be far more uniformed and provided more often.
Now that you're winding up this current project on prison violence, what are the next steps for your work on this topic?
I like to believe that our work illustrates how researchers, independent researchers, and government can work in meaningful and sustained partnerships to co-develop evidence-based solutions for complex problems. And I think our work is an example of that. And again, grateful for the departments and the teams who we've been able to work with over the years. So in the coming months, we plan to continue our partnership with the states to create and implement and evaluate these high priority solution ideas that we feel can really improve and promote safety. There are other states outside of our consortium who are interested in our work, so supporting them to implement this framework and the project is something we plan on doing. And lastly, really advocating for the improvement of data all around, right? And I think, oftentimes the assumption is that we have a uniform way of measuring violence across prison systems. We do not. We measure violence very differently. And getting to a national measure, I think, would allow us to really have constructive conversations about those interventions that are being implemented in one state or another. And of course, work with states to identify ways to improve the detection and the reporting of violence within the institutions. We feel that too is an important gap. But ultimately, I think doing what we can as a team to ultimately just reduce the harm that is caused by violence. And we heard so vividly both from the incarcerated population and staff.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, so we'll have to end it there. Dr. Rodriguez, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great speaking with you and learning about the important work you're doing to understand prison violence across the country. On the next episode of Pracademically Speaking, we'll speak with a guest from the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections to hear how this important work is relevant to Pennsylvania. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.